Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, Don, just trying to catch up with the information and et cetera going on in our beloved state, if you will. I understand we have a situation that's a little unprecedented, but we'll be addressing that later on. Public safety matter, county attorney referring a case by the state of Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension back to them for further investigation, clarification, and et cetera. Doesn't sound good. But we have a guest from the state of Minnesota, so let's get him on, Don, and why don't you bring him forward.
Okay, yeah. A couple of weeks ago, we had Dr. Lewis Porter, the executive director of the Council on Black Minnesotans, on the air to talk about their police community forum held in Minneapolis in Heritage Park Senior Center over there on the 13th, a couple Saturdays ago. And Mr. Edwards, today we have him because they're having a another forum here this coming Saturday, the 27th at 1 p.m. at the Midway YMCA. And Dr. Porter, welcome to the show.
Oh, good to be back, Don. And just by way of correction, it's the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. You know, we have a new name.
Yeah, I know that, and I was looking at the old name on the screen, and I apologize. Yes,
that's okay. That's okay.
It's a mouthful. You have to.
Let me ask the question, Dr. Porter, in that
yes,
you
sir.
Were making sure that you were correcting us with regard. What was the reason for the change of the name?
You know, that happened before I came on board, but from what I can tell, I think that the people behind it wanted to make it clear that we are serving both African Americans who've been in this country for centuries, as well as African immigrants. That we're here for both of those communities, and I think that's the reason. Just to make that crystal clear.
Because well, let me just ask a couple of questions on that because
go ahead,
there's been discussions amongst those of us who are also historians. Why was the legislature not prepared to give them their own council as the Pacific Islanders and Hispanics, Asians, and et cetera? I mean, do they not warrant their own council, the African council?
The Asian and Pacific Islanders have a council.
So the Hispanics and so do the Native Americans.
Right.
Yeah. So why is it that they didn't give one to the Africans, if you will?
Oh, African immigrants and African Americans. You know, those two communities have been joined since the council was established in 1980. And from what I've read, because like I said, this came about before my time, from what I read, there was not a push that I could read about that I saw to break them out that way, that there was always the thinking that we'd keep those groups together and the new name would make it even more apparent that the council was to serve both.
Well, but let me just say, I was around then when that happened, and there really wasn't any discussion about, because there wasn't the presence of African immigrants in this country or in this state, but they are this country, as there has been over the last 8 or 9 years. And the conversation back then was clearly for African Americans, native born African Americans. And so I just wondered why the name was changed. Is there, in fact, let me just ask you this question. Is there a correlation between these two entities, as it regards to the issues, if you will, like education? We don't have a problem with immigration. They do. I mean, so how do we How do you balance it out?
I think there's a lot in common. In fact, I was on another show where a Somali brother and I were talking about that. For example, if I'm walking down the street, a Somali brother's down the street, we're both likely to get stopped and harassed by the police. Some of our young men are having some of the very same problems in school. You know, there are a number of challenges that both groups have in common simply because of the way that we look. Now, I know that there's the extra layer with the oftentimes with the African immigrant community because you have the language and you have the religious discrimination and all. But one of my goals as a new executive director is to look at those things that we have in common and how we can work together to address the disparities and the challenges that we have in common.
Yeah, well, you know, share some of that with us. I mean, because that's, you know, why we certainly have you on this evening again.
Sure.
What are some of the commonalities that, in your mind, you're now the head, you're a board, you have a board, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the commonalities? What are the goals? And what kind of financing is going to be allocated so that this can be a, well, whatever it's supposed to be, a commitment, if you will, a project, an undertaking that will be financed in such a way as that it will guarantee mm-hmm. success.
Well, I feel the economic
and how much money, as an example, is being set aside for the newly named group for this legislative session?
Well, this is not a budget year. We have a budget of about $400,000. And one of the things that we'll be pushing for in the next budget year is additional funding so that we can open some more satellite offices, that we can have a more statewide presence. And the plan is to open offices, perhaps not full time, but offices in Mankato, St. Cloud, and Duluth, so that we can have a greater presence. And that's one of the plans. You asked about things that we have in common, the economic disparities, the education disparities, the problems with police, and on and on. So I think there are more, when you look at African immigrants and African Americans who've been here a long time, I think we have more in common when it comes to problems and challenges than we have things that are different.
Let me ask you this question, because I'm also an internationalist in this respect. How do we reconcile the concerns with respect to the recruitment of foreign fighters? Does that ever come up for discussion in your board meetings, and is there a philosophical and policy position that has been enunciated with regards to that?
I'm sorry, the improvement of foreign, say that again?
Now, the recruitment of foreign fighters.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that has not come up. I've only been on the council since November. That
uh-huh.
has not come up. When you talk about recruitment, I know there's about foreigners. I know that there's been quite a lot of discussion about foreign workers in
St.
Cloud.
Oh, no. I'm being very distinct. And I know that our federal friends who are listening in would at least appreciate this, because the current U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, Andy Luger, has been working real closely with the Somali community and maybe some other aspects of the so-called East African communities on this whole situation of foreign fighters. You know, we've had at least seven or eight individuals, young men, primarily, well, actually all Muslims, who have gone overseas to fight technically against the United States and have died in combat. And I noticed that there is a little discomfort when this issue comes up. And so, Enda, we have you here with us. Want to kind of get a feel on what is the thinking in the African-American community to the best that you can ascertain with regards to this issue of foreign fighters?
Well, from what I have heard is concerned, especially, and I have to be honest, I've heard more talk about it amongst African immigrants than I have in the longstanding African-American community. But a lot of concern about, I'll say, our young men being recruited to a dead end situation that's not gonna end well for them. And I know that there's some organizations that are looking at that, looking at how they can keep a closer eye on the young men, how they can fight that and thwart those efforts, because you know they're getting young men who feel who either don't or feel they don't have a future and see this as their only outlet. And it's of course disturbing. And how do you fight something like that? It's sort of the same kind of thing we see with gangs. They often prey on people who feel their lives are hopeless, and they'll recruit those people because they're the ones most likely to join them. Mm-hmm. And I have heard some discussion, but as I said, I've got to be honest, it's been more amongst the African immigrant community and Somali and Muslim community than it has been with the African American community.
Okay. Well, one observation / suggestion, and I'm certainly going to turn you over to my colleague, Mr. Allen.
Okay.
The consul, I still refer to them as a consul, you know, probably should at least sometime over the next couple of months, maybe even during the legislative session, that would be impressive, particularly to conservative legislators. You may want to invite the U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, Andy Lugar,
mm-hmm.
because his office really stays away from talking in terms of recruitment in the African-American community for foreign fighters. Maybe something you may want to look at. Okay. Appreciate you taking the time to answer those couple of those questions.
I appreciate the question because I do want us to look at issues on all sides. So I appreciate the question.
All right. Thank you, sir. Mr. Allen, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for that, Dr. Porter and Mr. Edwards. The Twitter is lighting up right now, and they like those questions. Now, Dr. Porter, tell us what's going on here this coming. Actually, you can give us an update on the one that happened on the 13th, the forum, and then what's coming up here on the 27th. Yes, go ahead, please.
I'm happy to do that. The forum on the 13th, we got a lot of good ideas. We had police, we had young people, we had people who have been victims of police brutality. We had elected officials, and we had a very rich discussion on what can be done and what kinds of things to go forth. We talked about the body cams. We talked about the management of body cams. We talked about new legislation that could somehow protect our community, in particular African-American males who are often the victims of police brutality. And so we broke into groups, got a lot of rich discussion. We're compiling that, and that will be pulled together. You know, I'm working with another black legislative effort. We've been having meetings at the Urban League with a number of grassroots organizations, and we're all coming together to pull together legislation for this upcoming very short session that starts in March. So the first forum was on police community relations. The one that's coming up this Saturday is at the Midway Y from 1 to 5, and it will look at human rights, housing, education, and economic equity.
Okay. Now, about the one that the police community relations, you know that the Minneapolis City Council, is scheduled to take a final vote on a 5-year, $4 million contract with Taser International to purchase about 600 cameras.
Yes.
Has the council been involved as far as, like, you know, maybe collaborating with the council and the police department on oversight? And you know, there's always arguments about when the film would be released or the video would be released. Is there some kind of type of conversation going on so that when something traumatic happens, that we're not being held up and not seeing these videotapes? And there's some kind of, I guess we need a middleman diplomat, if you understand what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying, between the police department and the black
community. I do understand what you're saying. That came up, as a matter of fact, Dawn, during the conference, because one of the things that we heard throughout the day is it's not just the question of the cameras, but the management of the cameras and how long the film is kept and when the camera goes on and when it goes off. And I do know that one of the things that we heard at the forum was a call for careful management of the cameras. And the cameras are not a be-all and end-all and the ultimate solution, but citizen oversight and oversight for the management of the cameras and the way the cameras are managed and monitored is key. And I know that's one of the issues that the council and other groups will be putting in front of the legislature as this unfolds.
Let me ask a question, Dr. Porter, along those lines. Excuse me, Mr. Allen. Have you had an opportunity to meet and talk with both Chief Smith in St. Paul and Chief Harto here in Minneapolis to get their feeling about, you know, some of the discussion that is going on? I mean, we know this is a very popular discussion across the United States. But we call it, some of us call it police-community relations or police or community policing. Have you had a chance to talk to either one of those both chiefs?
No, we have not. They were not available during the forum, but we do hope to get them at a meeting or to sit down and talk to them at some point. They were invited to the forum. They were both out of town at that time, but we did have some. We had the Lieutenant Hines, where it was the with the.
Well, now, Lieutenant Hines is with the Metro Transit Police.
I'm sorry?
Lieutenant Hines is with the Metro Transit Police. He's not with the Minneapolis or St. Paul Police Department, right?
Right, okay. Right. And he's also I believe the president or he's an officer in the Black Police Officers Association in addition to working with Metro Police. But he spoke as well. But the two chiefs were not able to make it. But we do hope to talk to the two chiefs at some point.
Okay. All right. But you haven't had an opportunity to talk with him. Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. I'm sorry. I cut you off on a question you had for Dr.
Oh, no problem. I was just going to say, you know, the city has budgeted for two additional staff members to review and redact body camera footage. I would just say that I think there's an opportunity there for the council to step in and be a part of that. But anyway, let's continue with what's upcoming here on the Saturday, the 27th of February. Please, go ahead.
Oh, appreciate that. That's going to be a forum, as I said before, that's going to be looking at human rights, housing, education, and economic disparities. And we are going to have, we're going to first have the large group, then we'll break into small groups, and we have Jeff Hassan, who will be looking at the economic disparities. And we have Ron Hick, who will be looking at human rights, leading a group on that. And LaShella, who's with Micah, will be leading a group on housing. And so we're going to then break into small groups and have these discussions, look at where the legislature left things during the last session, what's coming up, what are some of the issues and views on the table, and really trying to come up with some recommendations that will lead to legislation that will make a difference in all those settings. So we're going to try to get those ideas on the table, get them captured, and then get those into the right hands before the session starts.
All right. Dr. Porter, okay. Along those lines, let me ask this question, because this was an issue that came up over a decade ago. Is there any anticipation on your part and part of your organization and these groups that you are affiliated with in raising the question to the state itself on why it continues to deposit and provide and have a fiduciary and fiscal relationship with these banks that are involved in redlining?
That has not come up, but I think that is something that should come up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you say it has not come up. Okay.
It is.
The reason
not,
I was questioning about
not recently,
and
in the discussions that I've been involved in, it has not come up recently. At least I haven't heard it, but I definitely think it's something we should explore.
Hmm. Let me name two banks that come into mind. I mean, we, on these programs, we do not hide behind quote unquote in relationships and et cetera. Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank are two that specifically Wells Fargo. Yet the state does a tremendous amount of business deposits and et cetera with those two lending institutions / banks and et cetera. And I was just wondering, and you've been absolutely upfront on this during this short discussion, but I'm just wondering, are your allies prepared to take that bold step and talk in terms of removing the state and the people's monies from these institutions that are involved in discriminatory practices as it pertains to the entire housing market, redlining, you know, a lack of commitment to appropriate and fair loans to African Americans and others of color. And so I don't need you to really answer that, because obviously you've not been talking about but it's certainly something that people are talking about and have been talking about for a long time here in the state of Minnesota. But appreciate you entertaining the question.
Right, and you know, it's, I'm glad you brought it up because housing is going to be one of the breakout sessions we have on Saturday, and I think that's definitely something we want to put on the table.
All right. Mr. Allen, I'm sorry I cut you off again, Mr. Allen, but go ahead.
No, that's okay. We have to get this information out because, Mr. Edwards, we're the only ones that will do it, and you know that. So with that said, now what I was going to ask you, you know, right now it looks like the council is at kind of a policy action phase in the policy circle. And you're getting the data, and you're finding out the problems to issue the assertions, to go to the goal, and you're doing the problem analysis, the problem clarification. The development proposal, will the Council on Black Minnesotans author the piece and send it to the revisor's office to make it a bill, for them to write a bill, and then return it back to the council, the board, the staff, and would they carry it over to the legislatures, like the Senate, et cetera, state reps and the senators? Is that kind of the way that things would go?
A bill about what in particular?
Oh, I mean anything. If there's ideas,
mm-hmm.
if there's ideas, like if you have, say that you want to start a business economic incubator to
mm-hmm.
help small African-American-owned businesses do a lot of stuff. Well, you could put a price tag on that, write the language internally, and send it to the revisor's office. Actually, anybody in Minnesota could actually do this, and send it to the revisor's office. The revisor
right.
would look at it, turn it into a bill, send it back, and then it would be the individual or the group's responsibility to carry it over to the state capitol
exactly.
to talk to the
exactly.
Republican, Democrat, Independents. So I guess my question is, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, please.
Well, I'm going to say we have two approaches this session to actually get behind fewer bills and put more energy into them. You know, in the past, sometimes the council has had 12 to 19 and sort of got scattered. But we're using a more concentrated approach this time where either the bill may come from the council or come from the council in coalition with other organizations and other people we're
mm-hmm.
working with. And we'll put those forward and put a lot of energy into them. We'll be testifying. We'll be getting citizens down to the Capitol and really pushing on those. And you're right, that, and then taking advantage of the ability to go to the revisor's office, put those on the table. We have legislative members who are committed to helping us work with them, work with certain bills, get them through, and put some energy behind them and really make a difference. Because, as you know, the thing about this session is there's more attention on a lot of these issues and there's some money to be had this time around. So it's really critical mm-hmm. that we have a coordinated effort this time.
Okay, a couple more questions. What was the event or crisis that, and you know, in the public policy cycle, that's just terminology they use, what is the event or crisis that facilitated or motivated these two very important meetings for the council?
Oh, I think with the one we're having this coming Saturday, we pulled topics from our survey that
mm-hmm.
Constituents had identified as important, plus the economic disparity and education disparity one, because that one was coming up. There was so much attention on that, and the time was just right. But the other issues came about as a result of a survey that the council had last year
mm-hmm.
where constituents identified those as key issues. The first
mm-hmm.
one on police-community relations was really generated by the Jamar Clark shooting and all the efforts and all the attention around police brutality in nationwide and in the state. So that came out of that, and then the survey generated the other set of topics.
Okay, and what the survey...
Go ahead, Doc.
Let me just tell everybody. The survey that Dr. Porter is talking about is located at mn.gov/CMAH. That, again, is mn.gov/CMAH. And you will find that. It's called the 360 survey on the front page of the council's website. Go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
Yes, thank you for that, Don.
All right. Okay. Yeah, my question, and actually probably my last question, and I know we're coming to the end of this excellent discussion and reflection with Dr. Porter. Dr. Porter, you mentioned that the reference to Jamar Clark, which has become a kind of celebrated case, if you will, in this state. A number of organizations have kind of enhanced their portfolio. Some individuals have enhanced their portfolio, et cetera. This morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the largest paper in the state of Minnesota, on the front page above the fold, reported that the county attorney, Mike Freeman, had returned the investigative file and et cetera to the BCA. And, of course, the BCA is a part of the state of Minnesota. Do you have any information that could enlighten our listening audience on what has happened, why that happened, and what pieces of the investigation did the BCA fail to complete in an appropriate and legal manner? Can you give us any insight into that?
You know, I don't, Ron, I don't have any insight on that. I saw the article like everyone else did, but I have no additional insight on that. I know that one of the things that came up during I-4 was the whole thing of the grand jury, and should the grand juries continue to operate, and should we look at other methods when dealing with issues such as these. But on that particular story, I don't have any more information.
Okay, all right, thank you, appreciate it. Mr. Allen, we probably want to wrap.
Yeah, well, you know, the phone lines are lit up, so, and we do have one caller that would like to ask a question. Caller, you're live on the air with Dr. Lewis Porter, Executive Director of the Council for Minnesota's African Heritage. Go ahead and ask your question. Identify yourself also.
Yes, my name is Lisa, and I'm calling from Minneapolis. And my question for Mr. Porter is, I know that the council has been active for a while, and listening to you speak on the forum that you're going to have this weekend and the process of that, I want to know, first thing I wanted to say, the importance of our young boys in school, if we're focusing on that, the young boys in our schools. But one thing I wanted to say, nationally and locally, there have been a lot of studies being done on the disparities that has taken place with African Americans in the state of Minnesota. And my question for you is, are there any bills currently in place that you are prepared to submit to get to for the legislation in a place in without us having to have these forums? Do you have any bills specifically that you are ready to put forth to tackle some of the disparities that we have been dealing with for years?
Yet I know there is some legislation that Senator Champion has, and I don't have the exact numbers of the bills, but there are some bills that deal with disparities. And what we're doing now is we're trying to decide which of those bills we're going to really put our effort behind. And that's part of the reason for Saturday's forum. But yes, there are some bills that are coming forth in this session that actually deal with that. And so we're in the process now as a council deciding which of those bills is going to have the most power, which one is going to help the community the most. So that's what will be discussed. But you're absolutely right. There are some bills that are out there that have been drafted right now.
All right, caller,
okay.
We hope
all
that
right.
Answers your question. And Dr. Porter, want to thank you for taking the time to be on with us again this evening, and we'll be looking forward to talking with you probably in the next couple of weeks.
Sounds good. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good night.
We'll give that address again at the end of the show. Thank you.
All right, then.
Okay, Mr.
All right, Mr. Allen. Well, interesting question. Preparation, I think that's what the caller identified as Lisa was talking about. Preparation, preparing for this. And Dr. Porter pointed that out in his reflections, that this is what is called the short session. Kind of reminds me of the grand juries, which are long session and short sessions for those that understand the grand jury system. But anyways, Mr. Allen, I want to move on to the article that I made reference to, this morning's edition of the paper.
Yes.
I was taken back that the county attorney, this is extremely rare. There are situations in basically what they consider to be non-significant cases and et cetera, where the assistant county attorneys
may ask for some supplements, as they call it, and additional reflections. But to send the entire case back, set your scheduling back, and et cetera, to convene a grand jury, was quite a surprise to me. What is your take on this, Don?
Well, when I saw the story, Mr. Edwards, and I read it thoroughly, I was a little bit troubled because, first of all, and I'm just going to go through the setting here, I saw the picture they posted online with people hollering in the lobby of, it looks like, Mr. Friedman's office. And secondly, I think there's trouble in paradise. I think that this particular case has been misled, for lack of a better word, and I'm also troubled that, you know, in the very beginning, as we reported on this show here, Mr. Edwards, that, you know, there were people saying they had cell phone videos. There were people saying that they were taking testimonies because they witnessed the shootings. And also, we've never heard from those people, nor have we heard a word from Jamar Clark's alleged girlfriend that was the genesis of this whole situation in the first place. So I am concerned.
Well, let me say this, if I were in the role of the prosecutor or the defense attorney, in the case of the young lady that was identified as his girlfriend who was injured that night, she would not have seen the final seconds of Mr. Clark's life because she was inside of the ambulance, and in fact the camera on the ambulance would have had a better angle than she would have had. But it's interesting that no one has talked about what she suffered through, and there was some reflection about a month ago, people talking in terms of domestic violence, domestic abuse, and et cetera. But I noticed that I've not heard the NAACP or Black Lives Matter enunciate a lot of concern about the possibility of that happening, and that, of course, what was in the police reports and et cetera. But I think that your point is well made and well taken because, man, on the morning of the 15th of November, even around 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning, there were all kinds of activists and NAACP and Black Lives Matter on the streets. Some had been there for 4 or 5 hours. Some maintained that they arrived a short time after Mr. Clark was shot and killed. And, of course, there was just a lot of discussion going back and forth of all of the witnesses, including eyewitness accounts on one hand. In some cases, eyewitness accounts supported, they said, by video, if you will. By Sunday afternoon, around 2 or 2:30, Nakiba Levy-Pounds and high-ranking officials of the NAACP were giving information to the media that they had evidence and et cetera. And, of course, by the following day, Monday, people were saying that he was handcuffed and et cetera. But I kept waiting for the video, you know, I mean, a national broadcasting entity would have probably paid as much as $5,000 for a video, and particularly if there was a video that was referred to by a young lady now that is trying to run for political office in North Minneapolis, that a police officer had their foot on Mr. Clark's chest and was shooting him in the head. I mean, those were as graphic as the pictures that came out of North Charleston, South Carolina, when Walter Scott was shot and killed by a white police officer in that city. But what I'm concerned about tonight, Mr. Allen, and the phone lines are open, we've already received a call,
yes,
is the preparation that the organizations have provided to their witnesses, because the grand jury is different from going in front of a petit jury of 12 people, particularly in a capital crime. You have to, if you've not experienced it, and basically 99% of America's population has not experienced going in before a grand jury, be it state or federal, you know, your people really have to be on top of their game. And also, if you go in before a grand jury and the prosecutor tricks you into a perjury, you will be prosecuted. So I've been rather concerned that this process of helping and providing guidance to people, not helping them make up a story, but letting them know. I mean, let me just give you a quick example.
Right.
You're called before the grand jury. You're to be there at a time certain. In fact, if you're not there, the United States Marshals will come out and pick you up. Well, in this case, it would be the state, so it would be deputy sheriffs from Hennepin County will come out and take you into custody and take you back to the government center. And, in fact, we'll have a judge prepared and ready to receive you and indicate that you either will cooperate or you'll be jailed. So you agree. You wait outside of a specific room. A county prosecutor comes, the door opens the door, asks you to step in. You step in, and it is like a formal courtroom, except there are 23 individuals, none of whom you basically know, who are sitting there. There's the prosecutors. They could be as many prosecutors as they want. You are set in the witness chair, and the examination begins, including any evidence that you have indicated that you had, that you've turned over to the investigators and et cetera. Questioning begins. After the prosecutor is through examining you, any member of the grand jury can ask any question they want to ask, if you will, and then you're excused, if you will. Now, there's a record of your testimony and et cetera, but there's a very elaborate process that has to take place in order for that to be made public. And by the way, you're really not allowed to speak about what you really testified to in front of the grand jury because it's a secret process and et cetera. So my question has been, Mr. Allen, how the evidence was handled by the NAACP, Black Lives Matter, and anybody else that said that they were involved in taking testimony and et cetera. How people will be briefed and made to understand that they will not have an attorney in the grand jury room. You are not allowed to bring anybody in there that represents your side of the proposition, if you will. And I cannot determine, maybe we can have some of our callers call in and help us out. I have not determined that any significant amount of video evidence or witness statements were turned over to the FBI and the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension during a little over 2 months, if you will. But now we are being confronted as a community by the chief prosecutor, the county attorney, who sends the case back to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. Now, if you remember, Mr. Allen, when the announcement was made almost 3 weeks ago that the investigation was completed, the federal government was quick to say, oops, you know, that's the state. We have not completed our investigation. And so maybe we have some listeners out there that can enlighten us from the NAACP or Black Lives Matter. Maybe we can get the chairman of the powerful Legal Redress Committee or the Public Safety Committee to give us a call. The phone lines are open. You know, there's a chance for everybody to hear just what has happened. And I'm also interested in the membership of the NAACP, what they have been told and what it is that they can expect as it pertains to the NAACP's role and participation in this process. County Attorney Freeman is now saying that he expects that possibly by the end of March, they may be able to do something. Now, a spokesman of his, according to this morning's Star Tribune, actually came back after that statement and was made and said, we hope that the BCA will have completed its charge and responsibility and satisfy the questions that we, the county attorney, have. I'm not quite sure what that means. Does that mean late May, right in the middle of the summer, in a heated political contest, both locally and nationally? I'm not sure, Mr. Allen, but give our number out so that the phone lines are open.
Phone lines are open. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. If you have a question, comment, suggestion, go ahead and give us a call.
We'd really like to hear from members of the NAACP, because we assume that in their last couple of meetings, they did not meet in the month of February, and they will have some difficulty meeting this month, in a couple of days, because the Tuesday date that they normally meet on will be the super caucuses. And I understand that you, Mr. Allen, my friend from the right, and the conservative wing will be taking care of your business and supporting Donald Trump and all of that other kind of thing. But on this particular point, do we have any NAACPers that can enlighten us on what they understand to be the protocol as it pertains to the witnesses? The witnesses are so important in the pursuit of justice.
Yeah, it's key. It's key in this case. And, I mean, I'm not seeing anybody saying anything, producing anything, or even publishing anything close to what we've heard, you know, in the 24 hours, 48 hours after the Jamar Clark shooting. So it would be very interesting, Mr. Edwards, to see how this all shakes out and see who gets shook up. And we'll leave it at that.
Well, absolutely, because I know that there is a lawsuit. You've got to remember now, there is still a lawsuit pending, though it has to now change jurisdictions. You remember, actually, that lawsuit was being filed on the same day that the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension was turning over its investigative report to the Hennepin County attorney. We don't know the status of that, though I probably submit that motions have been filed by the state of Minnesota asking that that lawsuit be dismissed. But now here's the thing. With the case being sent back to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, this is an opening. And I would assume that in tomorrow morning's edition or Friday's edition of the paper, we will see representatives and their lawyers of the NAACP and Black Lives Matter and all other supporters enunciating and reaffirming their lawsuit. Wouldn't you think so?
Yeah, we'd hope to see that, Mr. Edwards. Yeah, that'd be the right thing for them to do, of course.
Yes, because actually Mike Freeman has reopened the door and actually has kind of taken the pressure off himself and sent the case back to the BCA. In fact, I'm interested to see if the Star Tribune will do an editorial, not a general news story, but an editorial about what all this means. I repeat again for our listening audience, the case has been referred back to one of the three investigative entities, two of which did a joint investigation. That was the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. That appears to me to reopen the legal process that allows for the NAACP to go back into court in Ramsey County and resubmit their arguments that the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and by extension the state of Minnesota be compelled to make the videos available, right?
Right, correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Correct.
And I'd like
correct.
To hear, you know, some reflection and discussion on that because, like I said, I expect that there was probably a press conference today, this afternoon, but if not, certainly by tomorrow for reflection and printing in Friday's edition of the paper, television. Did you know, well, you were engaged in your professional responsibility, but I found it interesting that none of the TV stations really dealt with the fact that the county attorney had returned the entire investigative case back to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. You know, normally you would think that'd be newsworthy. You know what I'm saying?
Kinda make us understand
what is going on. But again, I'm calling upon representatives or members of the NAACP because I'm quite sure they had discussions in January about their strategy. They retained the services of a law firm in St. Paul and et cetera. And so I'm just dying to know how this will legally be approached. And again, those phone lines are open.
Yeah, again, those numbers are 347-426-3904, 347-426-3904. Give us a call. Someone explain this. Because I'm scratching my head now, you know, and I think that I think this is going to be very interesting, Mr. Edwards, because Mike Freeman, returning the file or the case back to the VCA. I think it's a creative problem for a couple of these groups out there. ACLU and Black Lives Matter and the Minneapolis NAACP, who has still to this day not provided the trail of paperwork that gives them the go ahead for any of this.
No, I have to correct you, my friend, from the right.
Okay,
no, I was told by NAACP members that there was a document, this was over 10 days ago, 14 days ago, that they were told, some said that they saw a text message, which is not a legal form per se, which said that, get this now, that the state conference, W.C. Jordan, the state conference president and also president of the Rochester, Minnesota branch of the NAACP, had received a written document from the office of the president of the NAACP, Cornell William Brooks, if you will, authorizing the legal action that was taken in the district court here in Ramsey County a little over almost 3 weeks ago. So I have to correct you there, Mr. Allen.
Okay. Well, you know, we have not seen it. I'm a member in good standing, Mr. Evers, and I haven't seen.
That's why I kind of said it, Mr. Allen. I thought maybe that you had not received a copy or et cetera. I know that some of you had asked the secretary of the branch to provide a hard copy of the letter of authorization and permission, but I can't find anybody over the last 2.5 weeks who has a letter that says that the National NAACP authorized this lawsuit to go forward.
Yeah, I have. I haven't seen anything, and I've sent email after email. I don't get a whisper answer from any of those folks. So, I mean, at this point, you know, it's just a crapshoot. I mean, you know, they probably think that someone's going to get rich through the NAACP and the Nationals will get some money out of Minneapolis, but they have another thing coming, and they need to get clear on what's happening because the governor can't get.
Well, clearly, though, the organization. Because the law firm, I think it was called Mazzello in St. Paul. Now, unless they're doing this pro bono, you have to figure that already the legal bill must look like $10,000-$15,000 already. So I assume that the Minneapolis branch has that amount in escrow, if you will. If not, if it is pro bono, then the law firm, as part of its pro bono trust fund, is going to handle the case. Now, with this new dimension and the fact that the case is back under the auspices and investigative protocol of the state of Minnesota, that'll take another $15,000 to $20,000, because you go back in court, you re-prepare your briefs and et cetera, if you will. And arguments to the court. That's, you know, as we all know, that's what a brief is, and et cetera. I mean, I just think that there's something happening here that maybe Mr. Freeman knows that maybe hopefully at some point the community will find out. But I I'm kind of surprised, Mr. Allen. I'm looking over at you there, that we don't have the phones aren't ringing. Or is our phone system on, Mr. Allen?
Oh, it's on. It's glowing. It's the chat room is full of folks, and we have someone listening in at a block number, which always shows up as 111111111. And we'd like to thank you, sir, for listening. And but other than that, you know, we have nobody trying to call in at this point to even offer defense or offense, for that matter. I mean, maybe we should call the young lady that was on CNN for NAACP and Black Lives Matter and said that the police were responsible for shooting those folks over there and ask her.
Five African-Americans on the street there along Morgan Avenue North. We want to make sure our international and domestic audience are right in lockstep with us. I'm receiving some text messages from overseas right now as we speak. Asking why can and why has there not been clarification? A couple of, let me see,
Oh, yeah, a couple of calls, text messages indicating that they have now accessed this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. They also asked me some questions, Mr. Allen, about an article that I wrote in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder 3 weeks ago indicating that there was a problem with the investigation and with the case. But as I have indicated on this program and in my own columns, that my conversation is with the Department of Justice in Washington. I clearly indicated I will not give testimony other than before a federal grand jury because of the misconduct of the state of Minnesota during the course of the investigation. So I just want to kind of get that out so that nobody accuses us of not being transparent and et cetera. So, well, I am really surprised, Mr. Allen, that we have not gotten any kind of call raising and clarifying what the strategy is. I mean, the prosecutor has returned the case back to the state. Is there a strategy, Mr. Allen? Do you think so?
I don't know. I mean, I could, well, you know, Mr. Edwards, we like to play the role here. Let's just go ahead and make this call to Ms. Rashida Williams.
All right,
communications person for the NAACP. Hello, you're live on the air with the Ron and Don Show. We're looking for the fifth City Council Ward candidate, Ms. Rashida Williams. She hung up.
Did the communications director hang up?
Yes.
I'm not understanding.
She has a 404 number, which is Atlanta, and she's running for office here. She had, Mr. Edwards, she had a dinner tonight, community dinner Wednesday, February 24th at Wyman A&E Church in North Minneapolis there. And for the community, it's a special community elders.
Elders. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. The same elders that came under attack over the last 3 months for being worthless and should not even be allowed to live and breathe. Is that the same elders that you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I will get an update on that shortly.
Okay. Do we have W.C. Jordan's number? Let's give W.C.
Jordan a call.
Oh,
yes. Just a minute, Mr. Edwards. That's a
now, what
idea.
We're doing to our, for our listening audience, we are calling the State Conference, the powerful, powerful State Conference president, in Rochester, Minnesota. We were told by members of the NAACP that W.C. Jordan was the person that handled the request and notification to the national office that a lawsuit would be filed here in the matter of Jamar Clark. Do we have W.C. Jordan's number? Can we ring him up?
Yes, let's ring him up and see what he's going to do. If he's going to have a problem.
Hello.
Hello. We're looking for Mr. W.C. Jordan with the NAACP. You're live on the air on Blog Talk Radio. Hello. Hello, Mr. Jordan. Are you available? You are live on the air on the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting nationally, and he hung up too. Yes,
well, wait a minute, Mr. Allen. Now, it's because we'll be accused of ambushing and playing games. You mean that the state conference president of the NAACP of the Minnesota-Dakota Conference hung up on a member in good standing, though you probably won't be that tomorrow morning, but Mr. Allen, my co-host here and associate, is a member in good standing of the NAACP, has his card. In fact, we may even have you give your card number over the air. You're saying that the state conference president, when you asked him that question, hung up the phone?
He might have hung up on our caller that's live on the air with us, too, right now, Mr. Jamar Nelson. Mr. Nelson.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Oh, hey, Mr. Nelson, how are you doing, sir? Let's just get to the hunt. Well, we have a lot of time. We have 35 minutes. Mr. Nelson, we have been attempting to analyze the breaking story here in the Twin Cities this morning that the county attorney slash chief prosecutor returned the investigative case of the death and all circumstances surrounding the death of Jamar Clark, a 24-year-old African-American shot and killed here on the 15th day of November. Now, Mr. Allen asked a question and made a statement, and I had to correct my colleague because he said that he thought that that no authorization had been given. I've been made aware by reliable sources that a document allegedly exists, a communique from the national office in Baltimore, Maryland, authorizing the lawsuit. Now, the lawsuit has taken on a new life with the county attorney returning the Jamar Clark case back to the state of Minnesota. I assume that even today, while we were preparing for our national program here, that Black Lives Matter, and particularly NAACP and the Nakima Lady Founds and her associates, have gone back into court in Ramsey County District Court and have filed a series of motions to reengage the lawsuit. But my question, sir, I don't want to put you on the spot, Mr. Nelson, but my question, because my associate, Mr. Allen, is not able to answer it, and I know he's not been to any of the NAACP meetings. Have you, as an NAACP member, have you been briefed on the preparation of witnesses and the evidence that has been gathered by the branch?
No, sir. As of now,
that
I have
messed
not.
Up, G.
I'm sorry. Sorry. I haven't had any notifications of any other type of future engagements or any type of litigation that they're she want to involve the NAACP into. So again, I mean, I don't expect us to know. It came as a surprise, and remember, we were only made aware of this current lawsuit because of pressure from one of our astute members that put pressure on them to notify.
Well,
the
can
branch,
I ask you this question, Mr. Nelson? And again, for our listening audience, both internationally, domestically, locally, Mr. Nelson, we have checked and verified this. Mr. Nelson, as is my colleague, Mr. Allen, are members in good standing, dues-paying members of the NAACP branch of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Could I ask you how you voted when the vote was taken to move ahead with the lawsuit?
What vote?
It's the NAACP.
The branch. Didn't the branch vote to go ahead with this NAACP? I mean, with this lawsuit against the state of Minnesota?
No, there was no vote. There was no notification of it. Again, other than the secretary was put under duress to put out notification. We missed the meeting because of the storm we had last month. And the meeting prior to that, no, there wasn't any type of mention of a lawsuit even being
Well, I don't mean to be impolite or cut you off or anything, sir, but the death of Mr. Clark happened in November, and I assume that there were a number of special meetings of committees and et cetera, because I certainly on that Sunday, the 15th day of November, saw all kinds of NAACP officials and et cetera in and around the Elks and the site of the tragedy and the death of Mr. Clark. So I assume that when you had your December meeting, some of the strategy was laid out and a series of motions were made to authorize the leadership moving ahead, sir.
Well, you would be assuming wrong. We didn't speak of it at all. I mean, this was the meal when I was almost thrown out. But, again, mention of it then either. It's not in the notes, the minutes, which I still have records of. No, there was no mention of it. So, again, but this is women now. Let's remember that we shouldn't be surprised. There's no transparency that exists from Madam President, and this has become the norm. You have to know someone to know somebody in order to get in the loop to find out what's going on with NAACP, unless members, again, get together and call upon the secretary or the president to release information that should be known to members that should be voted on. And again, neither motion has been mentioned or voted on in either meeting that we've had since the young man's death.
Wow. Mr. Allen, you have any questions? Because I'm kind of stunned. I'm knocked back by this. I just assumed when I heard that a letter was in play a couple weeks ago that supposedly was a letter authorizing the branch to go ahead, because Mr. Allen and I have been going over the Constitution and bylaws, and that kind of specific language authorized the branch to move forward. Contained and codified within that is the following: upon appropriate action by a majority vote, of the branch. And so I apologize, sir, by raising the question to you as if you were not being factual with us, because assumed that it happened.
And if I might add, I had sought out information about anything, once the lawsuit was brought forth. I asked if what we were going to do with the witnesses, because they keep asking for a plethora of videotapes, and I said, well, we were told that the witnesses that Madam President and others had gathered up had video evidence. So why are we steady asking Mike Freeman them to release videotapes when apparently we have a gold mine of videotaped evidence? Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was told that they would not be releasing any information about the witnesses that Madam President and others had gathered.
The county attorney or the leadership, legal leadership of the NAACP?
It was the leadership of the NAACP.
Would not be releasing the information and the evidence? Oh,
no,
okay.
They the witnesses that they had gathered, they said that they would not be. And in fact, remember now, Madam President had encouraged any of the witnesses that knew anything not to come forward anymore with any information, to bring it to her and to them, and they would decide what to do with it. So,
recognizes the danger of that, doesn't she? Because she is a legal practitioner in the sense that she teaches law, and also the chairman of your powerful public safety committee, who is a adjunct professor at Hamlin, I think, as well as Memphis State. I mean, these are people well versed, sir, in the law and the operational aspects of the law, and people are saying that the information won't be released. That's called obstruction. If you fool around and get caught out there, and the train goes by you, and you're standing on the platform with all the evidence in your hand, and the big train called the Freeman Express has gone on down the track, and the information has gone to the grand jury, and the grand jury returns no bill, and the police officers aren't indicted, and everything is closed down on the Clark family. I just want to make sure I get this right, is that you as a member in attending some of the meetings, you've never heard a discussion or reflection on what, quote-unquote, we are doing, they are doing in the course of the both support and information pertaining to the death of Jamar Clark? Because, I mean, the branch and Black Lives Matter got a lot of publicity, man, and a lot of money off of taking up and making this the significant issue, and rightly so, the significant issue that it became. So are the witnesses, do you even, sir, know how many witnesses were interviewed by the NAACP?
No, that information was not given to us. And it's funny that you mentioned her obstructing justice. It was encouraged. She apparently, in the December meeting, she said that she told the mayor that she would be obstructed. And I'm paraphrasing. She didn't use those exact words, but with the actions that she would be doing with, discouraging witnesses, things of that nature. Again, there was never mention of any type of joining forces from the Legal Regress Committee individuals who didn't speak at the meeting either in December or the last one that we had about any type of joining anyone in any lawsuits. And then again, the takings up of monies is never mentioned in meetings. And I find it, again, very odd that monies were taken up and the young man still didn't have a headstone until a number of our clergymen got together and paid for it, which is unacceptable.
I like to get this absolutely straight, and so that, you know, because I don't want no subpoena for no grand jury. But anyway, so in the NAACP meeting that I was not at, so people know, this was a conversation that was had with the members regarding the things you just said about her talking to the mayor and her encouraging witnesses not to come forward or go to her first.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
She
What's
said,
your address?
This is her. This was all of. This was all a part of her soliloquy of saying how she saved the city. You know, this, you remember, this is the lady that saved the city. So this was all a part of her soliloquy of what she had told the number of people whom she had met with that particular days following the murder.
Lisa, you're live on the air. What's your question?
Well, yes, I'm calling because I am also a member of the NAACP. And I was listening. I wanted to ask, could it be possible that the reason we as members don't know the specifics of the investigation, because the investigation is ongoing, and the NAACP may be representing some of the witnesses. And so in that case, it's not necessary for the members to make any kind of vote on this specific investigation. You know, that's not a matter that we need to be dealing with.
It does have to be discussed. And if we join any type of lawsuit, a vote does have to be discussed either by the executive membership or by the general membership. So that's incorrect, Lisa. And again, you were in the meetings. When was it mentioned to us that we had thought about joining a lawsuit on behalf of the Clark Fund? When was it mentioned to us?
Well, I think that the lawsuit, it includes the UCLA as well. So we don't know the specific.
It's not. It's not. It's not the University of Los Angeles in California. It's the American Civil Liberties.
Whichever one, you know.
Right.
It was
right.
More than one organization. So in that case, you know, that is an isolated incident, you know, where they are investigating that. So as members, it's not our business.
Wait, Lisa. I have to step in on this. You know, wait.
You better read
the
bylaws and protocol.
Yeah,
okay.
that's where I was going. The bylaws are specific. They are not blind when it comes to these types of actions. Okay, if the investigation is going on, this is the investigation by the NAACP or the ACLU is not a federal, state, or city investigation where it falls under the same laws that, you know, the NAACP would follow.
Well,
NAACP has nothing to do with that.
We have an
investigative unit
that investigates certain incidents, violations.
I'm sorry,
of
who has an investigative unit?
I just want to say,
the NAACP does. We have a branch, you know, that investigates complaints in the community.
You have a branch,
I got
or
a
you
complaint.
Have a committee.
We do.
Okay,
you have a branch, or you have a committee.
Well, in that case, we don't necessarily know the.
Are you saying to us that the NAACP Minneapolis branch has a special committee, which has investigative authority? Excuse me. So we don't talk over each other because it's important that there be absolute clarity. Are you saying tonight that there is an investigative committee that has been investigating the Clark murder and have gathered evidence and et cetera? Who do they intend to give it to?
What I am saying, as far as the NAACP, we have different branches. We have an educational branch. We have our
Do you mean that those are not branches? Those are committees.
Committees.
We have committees. We have a lot of different committees, and we also have a legal committee. So and we investigate cases. We refer them out to attorneys or whatever. In those cases, I'm not specifically known. There's a lot of things that it could jeopardize a case if we know anything of that. So if it's necessary for us to make a vote, we have not had any of the meetings because, like you said, we had the storm. So if we were made aware of that and what the
that
process
was in February.
Was,
there was no storm in January. So I mean, so we're just clear and concise with our information.
Was canceled. Is what I'm saying. And
yeah,
so
the February was canceled. The January wasn't. But go ahead.
In the upcoming meeting, we won't be able to attend. So then if that is mentioned, then I understand that. But then, and the time we're living in now with the NAACP, you know, we have you know, a legal issue. We have a criminal justice issue in our community. That also falls under the disparities that we're dealing with in our community.
Are you saying that your so-called committee, which has a name called public safety or even legal redress, has the same standing as a county attorney or a federal U.S. attorney? Is that what you're trying to tell our listening audience?
No, I'm not trying to say that. That's something that you're saying. I'm not even going that far.
How far
are
you
saying?
How far are you going?
We refer, if we receive a complaint, a call, we take the call, and we refer them out to places like the Civil Rights Department. Or things like that. And I'm aware of that. I remember.
Lisa, we're talking about what is called a capital crime. We're talking about the death of a human being. You don't refer that to the Civil Rights Department.
I'm not talking about the Jamal Clark incident.
Oh, I see. But we are. That's what we're talking about.
Okay, right. Yeah. I'm speaking of the NAACP as far as the witnesses, the NAACP could be preparing to represent some of the witnesses, so therefore, maybe...
Can't represent them in a grand jury, Lisa.
Exactly.
When you go into the grand jury, you're going there by yourself. You can't take a lawyer with you. So they're representing them how?
Well, when they come out the grand jury.
Oh, when they come out of the grand jury. And then what happens?
Well,
how are they representing them then? When they're giving their accounts of what has taken place, when you say that Nakima has said that don't speak to anyone but the NAACP organization, so then they have that information. So therefore, what are they doing with it?
I appreciate the fact that you have now revealed to us that there is a special criminal investigative committee of the NAACP that's been taking testimony, evidence, and et cetera. By the way, are you aware of the word custodial, aren't you? So who had custodial control of this evidence inside the NAACP? The videos, the witness testimony, witness statements, and et cetera. Who did the branch designate to have custodial control, Mr. Soule or Ms. Nakima Pound? Could you help us with that?
I would refer that question to Nakima. You would have to ask that to Nakima.
She didn't answer any
questions. But we wouldn't have been able to ask it until you just got on talking in the last 5 to 7 minutes and have given a significant revelation that the NAACP has a special criminal investigative committee that has been gathering evidence and et cetera in the matter of the death of Jamar Clark on the 15th day of November. Okay, I know that Mike Freeman and his associates who are listening in, I know they're looking forward to that. Now, has the NAACP stepped up and given any kind of statements to the FBI and the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension in this matter, to your best of your knowledge?
Mother Nelson, in the show, said that Nakima, in a meeting, I told people if they had witnessed the incident to only speak with her. Okay?
Only speak with her?
The organization. Come and speak with the NAACP.
Okay.
And
now that was over 2 months ago. So did that happen to the best of your knowledge?
Mother Jamal, did that happen?
So people came and met with her, talked to her, showed her the videos, and gave her statements relevant to their presence at the time of the death of Mr. Clark. Is that what you're saying to us?
I'm saying, you can't put words in my mouth. You're saying exactly what I'm saying.
All right. We appreciate you calling in.
And
I know that everybody looks forward to the Special Investigative Committee of the NAACP coming forward with the evidence at some point in time. Maybe they'll be called. Oh, you know what? Some of them will be called before the grand jury. Okay.
And it's still the Black History Month. I would like to say no, it's
not. It is. Black History Month. A whole lot of things may be ending. But again, Lisa, thank you. We've got other callers. We need to move on. Thank you. Appreciate it. Bye bye. Wow, gentlemen, that was quite a revelation that the NAACP has designated a special criminal investigation committee, and they've been gathering evidence and testimony and have been handling the evidence in the form of the videos. Boy, that's something. Of course, that now subjects all of them to being called before the grand jury. Maybe that's why Mike Freeman sent this thing back.
I guess so. I mean, and you know, she enlightened me and things I didn't know either. So, you know, never a dull moment when we get a call from Lisa. So appreciate her calling and
I definitely appreciate it because. Man, this has to be an uplifting to the our Clark family, because what has happened here now is that the NAACP is going to demand to make a presentation before the county grand jury. I assume.
Well, since they represent the witnesses, I mean,
absolutely.
I look forward to you know, finding out too. But I guess I forgot that's not my business, as Lisa stated it. But I'm happy to know that the witnesses are being represented by. Would that be Nakima that some of the witnesses are being represented by, or someone in the UCLA?
ACLU. I'm not sure that she has authorization from her employee. St. Thomas University to participate in that kind of action, but in that Ms. Dean indicated that the president of the NAACP had taken on this kind of legal posture, that means she's fair game for the both prosecutors. She's fair game for the state prosecutor, Mr. Freeman, and she's fair game for the federal prosecutor, Mr. Lugar.
Yeah.
So this, gentlemen, this can be very, very interesting in the coming number of weeks.
Well, which was the lawyer that represents UCLA? Which lawyer was that?
ACLU. Well, though, that was a law firm in St. Paul called the Missy or Massey Law Firm, and they went into court. See, I hope, here's what I hope. And I know that Dr. Pounds understands that, is that I hope that in their filings and et cetera, that they also indicated that they were representing some of the prime witnesses as well as they themselves had accessed video of the. This is what we heard on the morning of the 15th of November, that they had in their possession or had viewed, the law firm, the evidence. And I wondered, did they call and notify the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and the FBI and the Department of Justice, as well as the county and federal attorneys, that they had access to the film? I guess they were trying to, gentlemen, and we have about 11 minutes left, I assume that they were laying a clever trap, if you will, the NAACP and Black Lives Matter, a clever, clever trap. They were going to demand to see the video that the authorities had, and then they were going to release the video, gentlemen, that they have, right?
Right.
And that video they had said would show the actual moment of the death of Jamar Clark.
Yes.
And then this would be one of the greatest legal coups in the legal history of the United States. Can't you see the press conference they will have?
Oh, man, I mean, we're talking Wall Street type of conference. Every media member, everything, absolutely.
Mr. Allen, we have been blind to what is happening. They have created an elaborate plan of ambush, and they have closed the trap. And maybe that's what Mike Freeman saw, and so he sent it back and passed the buck back to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. But what has happened tonight because of a person stepping forward from the NAACP inner circle has indicated that a special committee, unbeknownst to you, Mr. Nelson, and you, Mr. Allen, I mean, I have to, you know, kind of signify a little bit as a person that's not a member of the NAACP, that neither one of you gentlemen knew about the secret investigative committee of the NAACP.
This is quite a bombshell that was dropped tonight. So, you know, but I'm absolutely pleased to know that, though, you know, and to find that, because that means we are on our game if we absolutely have that type of those different type of branches that Ms. Dean says that we have. Man, we're on our game, and so I'm happy to know that. And so, you know, we know that the NAACP will make sure that there's a thorough investigation and hold the fire to the feet of those that are investigating this crime. So I'm proud to know that.
Yes, and I think, gentlemen, that this brings a certain level of peace of mind to the family of Mr. Clark. I hope that some folks contact them in Illinois and certainly play back this program. This program can always be recaptured on demand, if you will. And we certainly welcome our own listeners and et cetera across the hemisphere to do that, because, gentlemen, I'm sitting here as one who has been involved over the years in some of the most tragic of these sensational deaths. Man, to hear that a civil rights organization put together a special committee in secret, if you will, and have been gathering evidence and et cetera, and then have laid an elaborate trap for the state of Minnesota by actually having a film which would counter and expose the fact that the government was not producing the right film, right? I mean, that has to be the hypothesis of what we were just made aware of by a insider for the NAACP. This is a bombshell, gentlemen. This is a bombshell.
An absolute bombshell.
I have some breaking news. 12 minutes ago, Black Lives Matter activists interrupted Hillary Clinton at a private event in South Carolina. Two Black Lives Matter activists interrupted Hillary at a fundraising event in a private home. One of them's name was Ashley Williams, protesting, demanding that the Democratic presidential candidate account for inconsistencies on her record on race, specifically around her comments made about crime in 1996. They paid $500.
All right, then. So we're getting down. I assume that these individuals would then be identified as supporters of Mr. Sanders, Senator Sanders of New Hampshire. This is dynamic. We can look forward to this.
Let me read on. Supporters of Donald Trump. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, no.
I know we're about to end. I'm getting a little sick of some of the condescending Bernie Sanders fans. And let's remember, they talk about this crimes bill and where Hillary and the president stood back then. Let's remember, this is when Minnesota was about to be known as Murderapolis and crime was exploding right in front of Washington. Let's also remember that Senator Sanders signed that exact same bill and supported it vocally as well as the president. So before they start calling Hillary a hypocrite, let's remember Senator Sanders signed that very same bill.
Are you supporting Hillary Clinton is what you're saying, what you're telling me?
I absolutely am in full support of
Let me just hang up on you now.
Now, Mr. Nelson, we have to be fair and transparent because my associate, Mr. Allen, is supporting Donald Trump.
Well, we won't hold that against him. We won't hold that against him. We won't hold that against him that he's voting for.
I want you guys
a
to
guy
be
that's
crying.
That's a bigot, a racist, and doesn't have any policies, anything to do with policies, and just because he's a millionaire, he's running a mockery of the Republicans. We like that. I like that.
Y'all didn't ask me who I support. Bugs Bunny.
Oh, Bugs.
Yeah,
is that the right hand candidate?
Yeah. All right, Mr. Nelson, we appreciate it, sir, and I did not want to be disrespectful as I asked you a couple of hard questions. I just was taken back because people had said to me that they had irrefutable proof of authorization, though no one has been able to produce it. I'm required as a journalist to be as harsh with you as any other person, but I want to indicate it's nothing personal.
No,
we need to
be transparent about this serious investigation into the death of the young man, one of our members of our community. And so, I was happy to answer any questions.
All
appreciate
right.
you guys.
All right. Want to thank you, sir, and we look to hear back
thank
from you. Future
right,
programs. All right.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Allen, we got about 4 minutes, man. What is your? I mean, where do we go from here? Because it appears that the NAACP has significant evidence that possibly has been withheld. I don't know that you want to do that in a capital crime, a capital investigation, but then who are we? We're just, a couple of African-Americans who are just analyzing the news and going forward. I certainly appreciate the second call this evening from our caller, as she talked in terms of she talked in terms of the structure that was put in place, and also that the president of the NAACP, now these were her words, that she told witnesses and et cetera not to come forward and et cetera, but to come through her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's going to be tomorrow morning's news. I'm sure.
I don't think so, because I think the Star Tribune and the rest of them want to continue to protect some folks. But I got to tell you, in all seriousness, the revelation that a secret committee, a special committee, even unknown to a significant number of the membership, was put together, and that this special secret committee. We have to ask this question of W.C. Jordan on the record with a copy going to the national NAACP. I assume that Dr. Brooks was informed that a special investigative committee attempting to run parallel to the FBI and the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and the Department of Justice was in place and has gathered significant evidence. Is that what? Because we have the technical ability to recall on demand, we have the testimony of the NAACP member, don't we?
Oh, yeah, we have it. It's right here on our – as soon as we get done with the show, Mr. Edwards, the podcast will be available in less than 2 seconds of this whole show.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this has been a very insightful revealing program, if you will. And like I said, I'm expecting by tomorrow that the NAACP, Black Lives Matter, their supporters will be announcing that they will be going back into district court in Ramsey County and demanding that a hearing be held and that the state of Minnesota be forced to introduce the videos. Now, in closing, and I know we just have less than a minute and a half. Now, does that include the videos that I assume that some of the witnesses turned over to the investigators for the FBI and the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and the Department of Justice?
I don't know.
We shall
yeah. All right. Well, Mr. Allen, let my man James Brown take us on home, brother. Because this has been an interesting program tonight, and to our listeners around the world and across the nation, this is how we do it in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Wednesday. The Ron and Don Show.
Put your bad stuff. Say it louder.